What If, the Len Bias Story, hosted by Jordan Ritter Kahn, is The Ringer's latest narrative podcast. You can find new episodes every Wednesday on the Book of Basketball 2.0 feed. Here's a quick trailer.
You've heard his name, Len Bias, 1980s phenom, second pick in the NBA draft. And then, cocaine, tragedy, one of the most shocking deaths in sports history. 35 years later, Bias's legacy is still making an impact. From Spotify and the Ringer Podcast Network, this is What If, the Len Bias Story. I'm Jordan Ritter Kahn.
It's The Mismatch, presented by FanDuel. The road to the NBA Finals starts now, and FanDuel is the place to get in on the action. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Quick Bets, which are back and better than ever for the NBA playoffs on FanDuel. Find what you're looking for faster and easier with more props right at your fingertips. You can check out live bets like three-minute markets and exclusive live bets like quarter player props, player assist combos, and more. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states or 18 plus in DC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. Today's episode of The Mismatch is brought to you by USAA Insurance. Life is full of tough decisions, and thanks to USAA Auto Insurance, picking your auto coverage isn't one of them. Make the switch to USAA Auto Insurance and find out how you could save. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
Welcome to The Mismatch. I'm Chris Vernon. Joining me as he does every Tuesday from TheRinger.com is Kevin O'Connor, a.k.a. Kevin O'Bomber, Kevin O'Camera, Kevin O'Conflict, Kevin O'Climber, Kevin O'Candyland, Kevin O'Blizarian, Kevin O'Kindness.
Kevin!
Verno, on this late Tuesday night as we record, we just witnessed an all-time great performance by an all-time great player in Kevin Durant. That was unbelievable. I'm in shock seeing that. It was just special. Just special.
That was downright shocking to watch a player, number one, play 48 minutes of a basketball game.
2 years after he ruptured Achilles.
That did not go to overtime. When he came out to start the fourth quarter, I thought, this is about to happen. We're about to watch a guy play 48 minutes. And I, in fact, said to my buddies, I'm like, you know, if something happens to this guy, you do wonder if it's a different coach on the sideline outside of Steve Nash, if he's getting beat up for this, right? I get it that season's on the line. I get that it's a big game. But, I mean, this is a guy that has logged a tremendous amount of minutes and had what we thought at one point was going to be more than likely a career-altering injury. Nope. And it has not altered that career at all. This was his masterpiece. You could tell at the very beginning of this game, very quickly, that James Harden is going to give it a go. He played in an enormous amount of
minutes. 46 minutes! And he was a decoy for 46 minutes. A decoy that the Bucks didn't attack enough when he was on defense. And they had Drew Holiday on him when he was on offense. What a waste!
What a waste. And, you know, they get done with that first half. And at the end of the first half, they go back to TNT during the halftime show. And they're putting up these numbers. And it was Kevin Durant and Jeff Green, 33 points. The rest of the team, 10. Kevin Durant and Jeff Green, 10 for 16 field goals. Rest of the team, 4 for 24. Kevin Durant and Jeff Green free throws, 9 for 11. Rest of the team, 0.
That was at halftime, right?
James Harden, 0 points. 0 for 6, 2 turnovers, 22 minutes. And it's like, all right, this is just not sustainable, right? You're not going to look up at the end of the game. I mean, they've got 43 points at halftime, and it's like you can't go the whole game with it just being Kevin Durant and Jeff Green and getting nothing from everybody else, including James Harden. But I'll be damned, Kevin, they damn near did. And Durant turned up in that second half in a way that we have not seen. A lot of people were likening this and taking great joy in this. You saw all the memes after they lost that game, the last game in Milwaukee, game four. And it was like people were sending out the memes like of Lil Baby, and you know, who was atrocious in that celebrity game. And it would be like Kevin Durant without you know, two Hall of Famers next to him. Or there would be like a meme. I saw another one and it was like, without two of the greatest scorers of all time, here's Kevin Durant. It was a picture of Harrison Barnes. And it was like
such a joke.
People were delighting in the idea of Kevin Durant having to be in the position that LeBron was in, you know, in different years.
Here it is. Here's what he
does. Curry was just in other years. And so, you know, it had been a long time. Like, really? I mean, you got to go back 2016. Really the last time we saw him in this kind of a spot where, you know, he doesn't have
when he was by far team. When yeah. he was by far the best player on the team the 2015-16 season.
Yeah, and yeah. he didn't have, not even close. And he had another guy, but they weren't loaded. You know what I mean? And since then, he's been flanked by two amazing guys when we've watched him play basketball. And so this was the, all right, now you're the guy. You've got to put the team on your back. You've got to make this team, you got to make everybody better. And he ends up, as I said, with this masterpiece of a game where it looks like they're dead to rights. Not only does he play 48 minutes in the game, he ends up, the counting numbers, 49 points, 16 of 23 from the field, 4 of 9 from 3, 17 rebounds, 10 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks.
Unbelievable. And not only that, Chris, not only that, he was their best defensive player.
Yes.
The whole night, anchored the defense, was switching onto the perimeter, getting stops regardless of the matchup. So on top of all the counting stats, you know, with the 3 steals, the 2 blocks, he was watching the game. A very high-level defender individually. It was one of the better individual performances, I mean, I think I've ever seen. You know, you mentioned the help he got from Jeff Green, who finished with 27 points. Blake Griffin ended up with 17. But the Nets are up in this series 3-2, despite Kyrie now missing a game, despite James Harden being limited after missing all first 4 games, besides the couple of seconds in the opener. Joe Harris losing his shot. Mm-hmm. The last 3 games, it feels like he's shooting 0%. I believe he's hit only 3 of his last 22 or 23 three-pointers after hitting nearly 50% catch and shoot on the season. Some of their guys, like even Bruce Brown, who's been very good besides the end of the game clunker he had, his floater's not fallen. And yet, despite all that happening around Kevin Durant, he had a masterful performance, making every single right decision in the pick and roll, every single right decision as a passer, getting the ball to Landry Shamet at times, who made some nice plays off those passes. It was one of the most complete performances we'll ever see.
For those that were hoping for him to fall on his face when he was without two of these guys flanking him, look, Harden, a shell of himself is not even applicable in this. I mean, that was not James Harden. And you could tell immediately in that game. He ends up 1-for-10. You know, Kevin Durant, when we ask superstars to be those guys that prove I'm the best player on the floor, I'm about to elevate this team to a level that they shouldn't even be at. When your second and third leading scorer are Jeff Green, who's on a nothing contract. Say whatever you want about Jeff Green and his talent level. He's on a nothing contract, and he's played for 50 teams. And Blake Griffin, who was a buyout. That, in the end, those were the second and third leading scorers on this team that just won an Eastern Conference semifinals game against a outside of DiVincenzo, fully stocked Milwaukee team.
Yep.
And that was because one guy. That was, I will impose my will. I am the best player on this court, and everybody will know at the end of this game. I mean, that was just, that's ridiculous, man. Just ridiculous. Truly. I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, look, he didn't have his guys. He didn't have Kyrie, and he didn't have Harden. He had whoever that imposter was wearing a James Harden uniform, but he didn't have Harden for this game, you know, to help him.
And with that, you know, in mind, the fact we've only seen Harden play one full game throughout five so far in the series, Kyrie now having missed one, I can't help but think even if the Bucks were to win these last two, I don't feel any confidence in their ability to get to win the finals here against either the Suns, the Clippers, or the Jazz. I mean, maybe they could get past the Sixers if Embiid is limited and all that, but this team is an embarrassment on the offensive end of the floor. Their inability to create easy shots, their inability to adjust mid-game. Like, where was the attacking of James Harden? He couldn't move his feet. He had that one nice play poking the ball away from Giannis on an ISO near the right elbow. But other than that, his feet were in sludge. He couldn't move. So why are you not bringing him in to set the screen, be the screener defender, get him on an ISO from the perimeter with Chris Middleton or Drew Holiday and attack? It wasn't happening. Where is the creativity? What took so long for Bud to pull Brook Lopez out of the game when Kevin Durant was just picking him apart, taking pull up after pull up after pull up? Why wasn't Giannis defending KD at all? Not once. Where was it? Switch it up. Throw different guys at him. It's a joke. I have no faith in this Bucks team to win anything.
It's the one guy that we've ever seen block a Kevin Durant jump shot. In 15 years? We've never seen somebody block a Durant jumper outside of Giannis. And you're right on the Lopez thing. Like, it's one of those, you know, that's the juxtaposition too, Kev. It's like, you know, that, and this is how Nash thinks because of how many pick and rolls he ran over the course of his year. If you put somebody out there, like, the second you're going to put that dude in the game, we are going to attack him until you pull him out of that game. They can't play Brent Forbes. They put Brent Forbes in. It's like this guy, he's got the scarlet letter on his head, right? Like, and same thing, but you flip it to the other side, and it's like the Nets, they sit there and they say, all right, where's our advantage? Now, we're going to put the screws to you with this over and over and over again. If you're going to lead this dude out here, this is what we're going to do. And on the flip side, it's like the Bucks, like, they don't exploit anything. They don't exploit anything. I mean, there we are again. Game on the line. Like, this is nip-tuck stuff. And Giannis walks in to a brick three, which caromed over to Brook Lopez, who, like, he wasn't in rebounding position. That ball was such a hellacious brick, it shot off to him in the corner. And then they got that, you know, the bump foul on Harden because he can't move his feet like he should be able to move his feet. Like, Harden was consistently just trying to draw calls because he couldn't move his feet and he can't move laterally like he needs to be able to move laterally. And you saw even all those times where Giannis had the ball at the top of the key, it's like Harden was just standing there inside the free throw line. Like, what are you going to do, man? Like, I can, like, I got one leg, but I can stand here. You gonna drive past me? Like, I at least try to steal the ball from me or knock it off your foot or whatever else. And just bizarre. Like, you know, they tried to run that side pick and roll with him and Holiday. Nothing. Holiday airballing.
Nothing there.
I mean, they didn't replay it. I hope somebody hit his elbow or something, because what the hell was that elbow airball? I mean, these are in, like, the, I mean, how many times do we come on here and I'm chronicling, like, the critical possessions and the ones where you just need a bucket, and some of the shots they take and what they get, just the kind of shots they get. And this Brooklyn team, they are making them look much better defensively than they are. They really are. That Brooklyn team is not, that thing is not loaded with defenders, and they should be able to exploit this Brooklyn team. And they just can't. And, you know, Giannis, again, he's got the big numbers in this game. And I've listened to people beat up Giannis over the course of the last couple of weeks. And I'll just say this. I do view it a lot through the prism of, and it probably, you know, it just colors my judgment a little bit when I told you, I did that whole bit last week about guys being 27 or older.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's 25, you know? And I do think to myself, like, because I even heard they were doing all the player, they're ranking all the players. They're talking about guys that could take you to a championship or whatever else. And this is Russillo and Pill on their Sunday night pod. And he was talking about who he would take Giannis behind. One of them was. And, I mean, it was all guys that were older. Everybody. And so, like, you know, and now I'm hearing those names and I'm thinking, yeah, they're all been in the league longer. And, you know, in 2 years, hopefully, we'll look back and we'll be like, man, that's not what Giannis was 2 years ago. I can remember people thrashed Embiid 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know why. I'm not a psychology man as to why it all matches up. And so many times, the great players in history have been 27 or older. And that includes LeBron. That includes Jordan. That includes Curry. It includes all manner of guys that I chronicled. But Giannis will, he's still learning from these experiences. He has been so good, so fast. He has won two MVPs at a very early age. But he is still younger than the guys that usually are the best guys on the teams that win the whole thing.
Well, he's still younger. There's still room to improve, Chris.
That's right.
I mean,
in 2 years, you would assume he's a different guy than he is now.
And like we say that as somebody who, like, he's won a defensive player of the year. He's won two MVPs.
Right.
Tonight he had 34 points on 14 of 22 from the field, 12 rebounds. It's not like he had a bad night. Like he had a bad night, right?
No.
But it's the little things. It's the fact that sometimes when he has a post-up situation late in the game in that fourth quarter, he's posting up James Harden. He goes to a turnaround jump shot.
That's right.
It, like, where's the power post moves? Be Shaquille O'Neal. Yep. Be tough. Be strong. Be a bully. That's the next step, in my opinion, for Giannis, is developing and honing his footwork on the low post in order to just destroy anybody who is smaller than him. Destroy them. He should crush James Harden. I don't care how good of a post defender James Harden is.
No.
Giannis needs to have a better move than a turnaround jumper, and that goes for every situation for him, too.
And look, Budenholzer has won an awful lot of games. Sometimes I think the Budenholzer stuff can be unfair, right? Anything good that happens is never credit to him.
Yeah.
Anything bad that happens, he's the worst coach ever, right?
Yes. Like it's like not always his fault.
It's sometimes the position he is in now, but he's now in that realm of the guy that anything bad that happens or they lose, it's the coach. If they win, it's not the coach.
I mean, right? I'll tell you what, Chris.
But like, he's in that zone.
I'll tell you what, Chris, like, my understanding is that some of the top coaching candidates out there, the names you're hearing, Chauncey Billups, you know, they're waiting to see if that Bucks job opens up. So, like, until we find out what happens with Milwaukee and Budenholzer, it's...
You want me to tell you if it's going to open up?
Sure looks like it might, and we also in the coming days might have some huge coaching news elsewhere, too, so we'll see what happens.
Oh, really? Interesting. Wow.
Today's episode of The Mismatch is brought to you by Hulu Plus Live TV. Looking for a better way to watch live TV? Stream your favorite sports and shows over 95 live channels with Hulu Plus Live TV. Get access to Hulu's entire streaming library, Disney Plus, and ESPN Plus all in one plan. Start your free trial of Hulu Plus Live TV today. Live TV plan required. Restrictions apply. Offer valid for new and eligible returning subscribers only. Access content from each service separately. Learn more at Hulu.com.
I'm going to tell you this, Kev. Budenholzer, you look at that team and how they have performed offensively, and it's just not, you can't excuse it. You can't excuse it. And it has just not been, this has been a worst of. You know, they have a wounded team that they're going up against that they have not exposed.
I gotta read you a tweet, Chris. I'm sorry. I have to.
Okay.
From Reggie Miller.
Okay.
I'm just gonna throw this out there to see what the responses will be. If you're Steve Nash and the Nets, would you sit James Harden and Kevin Durant in game 6 because of the heavy minutes tonight and push all your chips to the center of the table for game 7? So like you mentioned earlier, people might talk about the minutes load. There you go. There you go, Chris. From Reggie Miller, NBA Hall of Famer.
Look.
What do you think about that, Chris? What do you think? I want to know your response.
I said, well, number one, that's asinine.
Did he get hacked? Maybe not.
Never know. Oh. Probably not.
I don't think so.
Number two, I said this at the beginning, Kev. And, you know, I do think that another coach, it would be a bigger topic in the moment than I felt like it was.
Because he's a former player and because he's been through it, because he's done it.
Yeah. He's also intensely likable. And he's also brand new. You know what I'm saying? We don't really have a track record on him, right? But if you would have had, it's just the situation that Durant is in right now.
So you're saying he's not Thibodeau. If he were Thibodeau, I'd be like, he's running this guy. Kevin Durant tore his ACL, his Achilles 2 years ago. How are you playing this guy for 40 minutes? 48 well, minutes? You shouldn't have a job.
Right. Maybe the Thibodeau.
I'd fire him today. Is that maybe, what they would say?
maybe the Tibbs thing is a little extreme just because there is a track record of guys having their careers altered. And many have blamed that on the extreme amount of minutes, you know, for Noah and Rose and Dang, and there's a litany of guys, right? Heinrich, you know, there's a lot of guys that played a lot of minutes for Thibodeau and didn't play as long as many of their peers. So he may be extreme, but, you know, I don't know. Like another coach running just him specifically, right, out there for 48 minutes. It's just that it's the full, I don't think people understand how rare that is, you know, to not have any rest, you know, because sometimes you can, you know, you sit them, even if sometimes at the end, it's like they played 45 minutes, which is extreme. It's like you caught them a minute rest here, a minute rest there, but it's a huge game. And so, yeah, they're playing damn near the whole time. It's just that it's Kevin. And by the way, he didn't stay healthy this year. This isn't just about coming back from the injury.
Chris,
he didn't stay healthy this year.
On that note, that's the thing. The Nets were overly cautious during the season because they were still winning games.
Right.
You know, like you're going to play it safe until it matters. So they played it extra, extra safe. At a time like everybody's understandably complaining about the fact that we're missing out on a lot of stars. Stars are missing games. They're sitting out. It's disappointing. People pay, you know, obviously there weren't a lot of fans in the crowd this season, but when things are normal, people pay money to get in the stands. They pay money for their cable package, their TV package to watch these great players. So it is disappointing. But that's why the Nets do it. It's because when it comes to the point where you got to play your guys 40 plus minutes, you can on a night, you need a win and you're depleted. Like Steve Nash said in the sideline interview between quarters, you know, we need it tonight. And Kevin Durant, the way he was on, like if you're a coach, sometimes you just got to go off your gut, go out with a vibe. And Kevin Durant, the way he was playing tonight in complete control, did Kevin Durant ever seem tired? I didn't think he ever seemed tired on offense or defense the entire freaking game.
You know what I think he was?
I
think Kevin Durant was tired about hearing about P.J. Tucker's when he was tired.
I think so, too. You're right. He was actually very tired, just in that way. He was exhausted.
I think he was tired of hearing about P.J. Tucker and how difficult P.J. Tucker made it on him.
Totally worn out by that. That's for sure.
And so, look, this is the Bucks. It's a game 6. It's at home. No, they could certainly. It's hard to believe that we're going to get a good, great, whatever you want to call it, James Harden, right? Like James Harden, he's not going to be back and available to be the guy by the next game, right? We've only got a couple days between this. So by the next time they go out there, it's hard to imagine. He's also gained some weight, you could tell. You know,
I mean, this, you fall out of basketball shit.
Yeah, well, you got to stay off your legs. You know what I mean? You got to stay off your legs. It's very scary for the Bucks.
It's got to be terrifying for the Bucks if, you know, Harden is, I mean, what was he, like 25%, 30% of his normal self tonight?
Maybe.
He didn't look anywhere close. No. If you get like 60%, 69, 70% James Harden,
that's
nice for the Nets and very bad news for the Bucks. Very bad news.
But after watching him tonight, there's no way they get 60, 70% James Harden. There's just no way. Not in 2 days. I mean, he was 1 for 10, and he couldn't move. And he was not going to drive to the basket.
Early season Harden with the Rockets when he's just tanking games, not really trying. He wants a trade. He still even had some great performances. So, like, you could still have James Harden. I mean, he had 8 assists tonight. It's not like he can't pass. If he hits a couple more shots,
he had a couple rebounds and a couple plays. Yeah.
He had the poke on Giannis. He had some moments, but for the most part, I was just. I'm still flabbergasted. I'm flabbergasted by Budenholzer and that staff not going at Harden more. Where was it? I don't know what happened. And they're going to look back at the film and see a lot of missed opportunities.
Yeah, and maybe they will go at him the next time around. They do have another crack at this. They do.
Yep.
I don't think the series is necessarily over. I don't. We've just done this. We've done this back and forth 5 times now, right? It looked like they were going to get buried, but let's keep in mind, this went down to the last possessions.
Yep. 6-point game. Yeah.
And Kevin Durant just had 49, 17, and 10. Mm. Like, that's what that took. It took at home 49, 17, and 10. So I don't want to do the burial of the Bucks, but when you got that kind of a lead, you got to put your foot on somebody's neck. And they were up huge. They were up huge. They played a really good first half. But they just got Duranted in the second half of that game. Let's move to some of these others. The other one in the East, I had said I wouldn't be surprised if Atlanta got one of those home games. But if I'm being honest, I probably thought it would be game 3. And then after game 3, I thought there was a big part of me that thought, second half of game 1, they found something here. You know, they let Danny Green stop getting tire marks on his back, and they put Thibault and Simmons on Trey to make it a little more difficult on him. There's no DeAndre Hunter for Atlanta, and this is going to be a really tough road to hoe. And so after game 3, another 16-point victory, I thought, oh, geez, maybe they did just figure this out. I mean, they're clearly the better team. They've been the better team all year.
Yeah.
But that they figured out how they want to do this. And now Atlanta is in big, big trouble. A lot of resolve for Atlanta because it looked again last night like they were about to get run out of the building. And not only did they not get run out of the building, they mounted the comeback and then were able to get the win down the stretch. Trae Young with their crazy 18 assist.
Oh, my. One of the kickouts he had when he kind of like went up for the layup. And then kind of brought it back down and went back up and made the wraparound pass to the left corner 3. That was just an absolutely gorgeous pass. That's one of those plays like that makes this game of basketball just so beautiful.
Such really an extreme number, 18.
Yeah.
18
and only assists. 2 turnovers, just 2.
Yes.
2 turnovers.
Yes.
He's a special passer, man. He really is for a like we talk like there's a lot of great passers in the NBA. LeBron James, Luka, a lot of them are bigger guys. Ben Simmons, Trae Young is tiny. It's harder for a small guy. They don't like this is what makes Chris Paul so extraordinary.
Yep.
Chris Paul, a smaller guy for years, has just picked apart defenses. Mm-hmm. He knows how to use his body to his advantage. Trae Young has some of those similar qualities as well, where he doesn't let his size be a limitation to him. Like he plays bigger than his body. As a playmaker, he's a special passer, man. I love watching that guy play basketball.
Well, and I'm going to tell you, there are these kids that are now coming up that we have, and I remember us talking about this, maybe it was, I don't know, probably 3 weeks ago now. And you know, is in reference to Devin Booker. It was a reference to Ja Morant when he got to play Golden State and then 5 days later play him in a play-in game. We talked about it with Luka. We talked about it with Trey. And it was these guys, when they get in these high-stakes games, they are, you know, what happens after they run into some real problems? What happens when they run into some struggle where a team decides, okay, you don't get to do it that way anymore. And you have seen every one of those young guys that we talked about. And obviously this has happened with Mitchell too in Utah. There's a lot of young players in this league. I'm talking about the under 25s. But the ability for all these guys to have prosperity, another team decides, okay, we're keying in on you. We're keying in on what you want to do. And we're going to make your life hell. And they do, and then these players, every single one of those ones, Kev, have adjusted and figured out a way to be effective. That it happened with Morant, it happened with Luka, it happened with Trey, it happened with Booker. You remember the Booker, you know, it was like, oh, look, now they're making it hard on Devin Booker. You know, they figured out how they want to guard Devin Booker, and it's like, the marks of great players is when you take your lump, when you get shut down, when another team decides this is how we're going to make your life hell, and then they're able to come back. They get to go back and they say, all right, now I'm going to change my way I want to play. I want to change my way that I'm going to attack. And across the board, we've talked so many times about how the league is in good hands, but these young stars and the ability to be good, get shut down or struggle, and then be great again. I mean, that is the mark of great players. We just saw it with Durant. That is what this is all about. That's when you're great. You're great when PJ Tucker gives you problems, when you flail around, you know, in the second half of that game four, and it's just a struggle for you all night, and then you come back and you set everybody on fire. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, with hell's fury. Like, Durant, he took his lumps in that game five, or game four, he came back, and he melted everybody. And you see these young guys, though, doing it, and it's crazy. And it's happened over and over again. And Trey was the last one. It's like, okay, they figured out Trey, or Trey's not going to be that dude. Look at the freaking numbers that guy put up last night. That's freaky.
And then gets the number one defense. Yep. And then sometimes some of these great young players, Joel Embiid, have stinkers. Embiid played maybe his worst half of basketball. I mean, he did not look right. He did not look totally healthy. And if you're the Sixers here, you know, in this tight series now, you better hope you have a healthy Joel Embiid if you get by Atlanta for next round, because you're not beating the Nets, you're not beating the Bucks if you have nights like this from Joel Embiid. And it's like, it's a shame he's dealing with this meniscus injury.
What did he have? But he still had like, what, 20 rebounds or something?
He had 17 points, 21 rebounds, 4 assists, but he was on 4 of 20 from the field. 4 of 20. So, you know, you got to get more from Joel Embiid. That was a horrible second half for him. And, you know, maybe you will. You know, it could have just been an aberration. Maybe he just wasn't feeling great. But he admitted after the game, he's obviously dealing with the pain, dealing with it. So,
but this is what I've talked about, though, right? Like, this is what we're seeing with these guys. Would it shock you at all if Joel Embiid came back and had a 15 for 20 night with 43 points and 19? Like, that's the crazy thing. It's like, you get to do it against them, but then they come back the next time around and they figure stuff out for themselves. And I do think that's probably in the cards. Happy for the Atlanta fans to just get to see a home playoff win in a high stakes game. And they got some gamers on their team, man. I can't help but like it. I mean, like, I love Bogdanovich. I love him. He is
Can you imagine him on the Bucks?
Wow. Oh my God. I'm sure they do every day. I'm sure they do every single day.
It honestly is kind of unfortunate. Like that secondary ball handling presence who can hit clutch shots off the dribble, contested, who can play off ball, who is fearless, who can make smart passes, fits great alongside Trey on this Hawks team. It sure would have looked great alongside the Milwaukee Bucks.
I'm going to tell you something, though, Kev. Holiday has been an immense letdown for me. I'm a Holiday guy. I love Holiday. I remember how awesome he was in that series against Portland when we finally got to see him in the playoffs. And it was like everybody started giving him his flowers because him and AD, and they ran the Blazers off the court. And it was like, oh, Drew Holiday is like an all-defensive guy. And he's awesome. He's one of the most underrated players in the league. I mean, good grief, man. Do something. Give me a 25. Give me a, like, come on. Like, I know that he's not, like, focal point of the offense or whatever, but, like, good night. He has not been. Like, that's why you stay underrated, man. Like, you got to be, if you want to be rated where you should be rated, he's an outstanding defender still. There's no doubt about it. The guy is a great defender. But in terms of offensively, I mean, I need one of these nights for you to go big. Like, big, I mean, big.
Chris, he has always considered himself a two guard. Do you think that's part of it? That, like,
maybe
this Bucks team, they're starting five, Drew Holiday, Brooke Lopez, Chris Middleton, Giannis Antetokounmpo, PJ Tucker. There's no pure playmaker on that group. There's nobody who's a pure passer. And not that you need that. You don't necessarily need that, but you got to have somebody who can step into that role and do it at a high level. And Drew Holiday has never been that guy. He's always been at his best when he's sharing the backcourt with another guy who takes on those responsibilities primarily so he can do what he does best, focusing on defense and also being a spot-up shooter, cutting to the rim, and attacking secondary guys off the dribble. And in this situation, he doesn't necessarily get those chances quite as much. There's almost too much on his plate. But that's to your point. I mean, sure, would have been nice to see a higher level to his game, but if anything, he's just looked worse with the
interesting. Maybe I've never really thought about this, but you know how who else had a lot? You get the best out of them under those circumstances is the guy. He's obviously not playing because he got hurt. Is the guy across from him, in Kyrie?
Yeah,
right. But maybe you're miscast as being the guy that's got to run everything. You know.
It's not like he does run everything necessarily.
No. But I'm saying, like, you're the guy. Yeah. Like, that's,
he runs enough.
You bring the ball to court the majority of the time, right?
Yeah, and you want more from him.
Well, and he said 17, 13, 9, 14, 19. Those are the numbers in these games. I mean, so he hadn't had a 20-point game in the series yet. This was the biggest one tonight, which was 19. Would he end up 7-4-16? He's gone to the free throw line 5 times in the series. 5.
Better bring more
against a team with no rim protection.
Better bring more game 6. Better
bring
more.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I think this guy's a gamer. I think he's a player. And it's like, I mean, look, if I give anybody 37 to 45 minutes, they're getting me 14 points. You play anybody in the league, that's replacement level stuff. If I'm playing you 40 minutes, like, surely.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody. He's going to get me, those kind of numbers. I mean, man.
I mean, we'll see what he does in game 6 and game 7 potentially.
Yeah.
But some guys just reach their limits, and it's about situation. Sometimes it's about opportunity. Some guys thrive with that, like Donovan Mitchell, who every step of the way seems to get better and better and better. Granted, that series is tied now, but sometimes people stop getting better. Others don't stop getting better.
Well, and I didn't want to skip over. We'll go back to this Atlanta-Philly thing. Do you think that... Obviously, this is going to be so much based on Embiid and health. The Sixers, not only was Embiid not very good, they had, a 17, 18-point lead in that game? And then Atlanta got back in the game, had all the confidence in the world. And, I mean, look, Trae Young, we talked about the 18 assists. He had 25 points on 26 attempts. So they made him inefficient again. Collins had some big shots.
Big step up from the pass game where he didn't do enough.
Yeah, he did. But I mean, I don't know. We talk so much about what could be replicated, and I guess it's going to be dependent on the Embiid. That's like an all-time bad Embiid game. That might be. I mean, I would imagine. I haven't looked this up. There's no way he's ever been 4 for 20 in a game.
Yeah.
Ever in any game he's ever played in his life, including the first time he learned how to play basketball. Well, he probably wasn't 4 for 20. There's no way.
I believe he had a 0-for once.
Not for 20.
Not on 20 shots. No. Not on 20
That's what
shots.
I'm saying. 4 for 20.
No, not on 20 shots.
This is abysmal. You know what I mean? Like, at his size, there's just no way. I mean, you almost never.
Yeah.
I bet there have not been. Somebody could look this like basketball references. 7-footers. I don't have time to put in all the parameters, but 7-footers that have hit 4 or less field goals on 20 attempts. I wonder if it's ever happened. Like, 7-footers just don't miss. Maybe it would be like one of these perimeter guys, like a Porzingis or something. I'm talking about a center, though.
Joel Embiid, like, his worst game prior to this was probably November 25th, 2019. He had 0 points on 11 shots against the Raptors during a regular season game. So, of course, that's regular season, not playoffs.
It's Marc Gasol, by the way. I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, the guy who didn't play enough for the Lakers in the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they may still be in it. Yeah, that could be. And so we get the Bright Now Suns. How about that, Chris, huh?
Look.
Pretty cool. You got to admit, it's cool.
There's no question it's cool. Look, when I saw Chris Paul do his speech about him being counted out, and about 2 years ago, people write me off, talking about worst contract and all this kind of stuff. And then seeing Monty Williams.
Oh, my God. Post-game.
Made
me tear up a little bit.
He was... You know, Chris is with me in the darkest times of my life. Man, that's heavy. That is heavy. You know,
I've been trying to work on some more features lately, like different feature stories that should hopefully be out in the coming weeks, depending on how the playoffs go. And like, you know, just doing those. It's the relationships that people build that are most powerful, right? In this sport or any career you have, it's the relationships that you build, you know, that are lifelong or sometimes that are meaningful for a brief amount of time in your life, right? Sometimes people come and go in your life, but those relationships along the way, they all turn you into the person that you become. And to see Monty Williams and Chris Paul talk about, you know, kind of coming full circle, you know, being together again to have a moment to achieve this after so many years, and they've, in their own respective ways, been through different types of adversity. I don't know. It's powerful stuff, man. Like I said, it made me tear up watching that Monty Williams, you know, riff that he went on about just his life and, you know, the relationship with CP3. It's a cool thing to witness that group accomplish so much already and still have so much left to do.
Because that's different. You know what I mean? That's different. That's different. That you just feel different. You feel different when it's him. When it's him getting to experience that. That's not Mike D'Antoni and James Harden. That's not Nick Nurse and Kawhi Leonard. That's not. You know what I'm saying? This is a different deal. That's as close as you can be with somebody. You know, experiencing what Monty went through and Chris being there for him and by his side. That's different than your normal coach player relationship. And let me speak on Chris Paul real quick. So I was like everybody else. Chris Paul coming out of Wake Forest took the league by storm. He was very good immediately. He was on some not like great teams and was an all-star rather quickly. And I liked Chris Paul just like everybody else liked Chris Paul. And then Clippers Chris Paul made me sick to my stomach. I mean, I could not stand him. Because as a Grizzlies fan, we have wars with them. He was like the guy, along with Blake and DeAndre, that were the floppers and these floppers that flop around, and there's these wars and whatever, and he's always complaining to the refs and the antics, and he's just a rival, right? Like, you know how we talk about, I never hated the guy. It's like sports. I always respected the guy, right? And then as time went on, you know, Houston, I was more on the Chris Paul side, the James Harden side, so that got a little odd because I'd never been really a Chris Paul guy. And then I told you during quarantine, I had to do all these film things, and a lot of them were going back and watching those games. And partly that, watching him throughout those, but more so, and I've never like disliked him like personally by any means. He's always been super professional guy, and I've been well aware of how awesome he truly is the whole time, whether I couldn't stand him or not. I watched those tapes, but then more so, and I really, you know, you start to warm up to him. I'm going to tell you something. My opinion changed so dramatically in some ways, and my feelings changed so dramatically some ways last year. You know, that doesn't end the way he wants it to end in Houston. He gets traded to Oklahoma City. And this is the moment, Kevin, especially when he's 35 years old. This is the moment, if you're Chris Paul, you're like, man, F this. Get me out of here. Get me out of here. I'm 35. Do you like look at the amount of time I got left? How much basketball I got left in this body. I'm going to spend a year in Oklahoma playing with Danilo Gallinari and Gilgeous Alexander and Steven Adams. Like, where are we going? Lou Dort? Like, that's who I'm playing alongside? That's what's happening here? And he didn't say nothing. Nothing. He didn't make a peep. In an age where we watch Blake Griffin bail on a team, James Harden bail on a team, Kevin Love just embarrass himself bailing on a team. They're paying these guys $30, $40 million. They don't do shit. They dog it. Literally dog it. Just so they can try to, so hopefully you'll buy me out or get me out of here or whatever else. And Chris Paul could have gone about that all different ways, and nobody would have been out there blaming him because they would have said he's 35. He didn't want to play in Oklahoma City. He could have said, get me to Milwaukee. Get me to Miami. Get me to a place where I got a chance to go win a title. And instead, he put that team on his back. They were the best fourth quarter team, best clutch team in the NBA. He was the best clutch player in the NBA and carried their ass to a game 7 in the playoffs. Turns around and signs with Phoenix. His buddy Monty Williams, who hasn't done anything in forever, over a decade, and elevates them to a point where they're in the West Finals. And we got to go back and think. New Orleans, then you go to the Clippers. The Clippers for 30 years were a rat organization. And he got them to a spot where they made the playoffs every single year and had a chance, you know, at making runs. And to do that in L.A., and to do that now in Phoenix and to elevate that, you don't think Chris Paul could have gone to Sam Presti and said, yo, I'll be a good soldier, but get me to where I want to get. His choice was to go to Phoenix. That's where he wanted to go, you know? I'll do it there. I'll do it with them. I'll do it with Devin Booker. Not the obvious. You know what I mean? He could have gone and tried to team up with two other guys like everybody else does. He could have gone and dogged it until Oklahoma City just has to send him home like Al Horford or get rid of him or whatever. Instead, I mean, he put a team on his back in Oklahoma City and gave it everything he had, got him to a game 7, and then he goes and signs with Phoenix and look at him, man. He's in the damn Western Conference Finals.
And I think, you know, we're talking about Chris Paul, the player, Monty Williams, the coach. We also have to mention James Jones, the general manager.
Absolutely.
Who has put together this team, who has assembled an entire roster of smart, hardworking individuals.
That's right.
Who are selfless and work together for the greater good. They embrace their roles. They lift each other up. They have complementary skills. James Jones, you know, there was some good stuff from the past regime, a lot of bad stuff. He got rid of all the bad stuff and brought in a lot more good stuff and has helped create this this roster for Monty Williams to work with and install a system and bring in players and put them in positions to succeed at the highest level. And this Suns roster, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen in the Western Conference. We don't even know their opponent yet. Mm-hmm. But for them to get to this point in their first year with Chris Paul, with this new group together, it already is a season for the ages for any Suns fan. Like, this is a memorable team, and it's really the start of something because of how young all these other guys are. And the fact Chris Paul doesn't look anywhere near the end, does he, Chris? He still looks like he's ready to go for as long as he wants to.
Well,
it's something else watching him. But kudos really to that entire organization, James Jones, to Monty Williams, to Chris Paul, and that entire roster. It's sensational what they've done.
I agree with you. He is a guy that Jones, who obviously has to be trustworthy. You know what I mean? You don't have a guy like that. This is, yeah, it looks like Chris has got a lot of basketball left, but it also doesn't look like, you know, we're not talking infinite time here, right? Like, in terms of being the guy and I can take over the game. And by the way, that was his last game. Their closeout game was an absolute masterpiece for him. It's as good as you will ever see him. If you told somebody he's 22, they'd believe it. He was that amazing in that game. Athletically, too. I mean, he's just creating his space, getting to where he wanted to on the court. But, you know, you got to be able to trust James Jones. And the other thing is this. One of the sneaky, unbelievable signings in all of free agency is Crowder. And you can go back and you can find these stories. Crowder was a free agent after Miami, where he played in those finals last year for them, right? Crowder was asked about how many teams they heard from. It was over 20. There's over 20 teams that wanted Jay Crowder in the offseason. I mean, he could have chosen anywhere. So why? You know what I mean? You obviously, this is a team that 2 years ago won 19 games. And to have Monty Williams and Chris Paul and flip this into a thing where a guy that's got offers all over the NBA is willing to say, you know what? I'll go there. I'll go play there with that group. That's what I'll do.
I interviewed Jay Crowder for the story I wrote about the Suns earlier this season. And he told me a story about how, you know, I mean, clearly Miami did lowball him. They didn't. Mm-hmm. They couldn't offer quite as much as Phoenix or other teams could. But he said, you know, when Devin Booker first called him, he was unsure. He's like, this team hasn't done anything for years. And he says he thought about it more, talked with a couple of people. And he's like, you know what? Being part of this potential thing, you know, with this group can be special. It can be meaningful. This is a group that's hungry, a city and a fan base that's hungry, and he wanted to be part of that. I know this is like some cliche sounding stuff. I wanted to be part of something special, but I totally buy it. I totally buy it. He's always been that type of guy. He's always been about the team and always been about making winning plays. And Devin Booker, the way he made that pitch, maybe he had some idea that Chris Paul might be coming too. You know, he made the right choice. It's a perfect situation for him. It's a perfect basketball fit. And look where they are. Western Conference Finals, a chance to go to the NBA Finals.
That's right. And players always, every coach that ever gets hired, you know what they come in and they say? They all say the same damn thing. They all talk about it, the culture. They're all going to establish a culture. There needs to be a culture. We're going to create a culture here, whatever. Let me tell you what creates culture. Players. That's who creates culture.
Players always.
You know what
do.
I mean? Yep. It's Kyle Anderson telling me that the way he learned about being a professional was when he was a rookie, he showed up to practice and Duncan and Ginobili were already there.
Mm.
Now, the impact that has on a young guy, right? A young guy looks at that and he goes, wait, hold on now. I can't be here after they're here. They've been in the league for 15 years, right? And that's how it has to be. And so when Chris Paul and the Jay Crowders of the world, when they walk in that door and they're the guys that are, you're not going to outwork them and you're not going to, they're not taking, you know, the night off and they're not going to, they're always going to fight every game. And they're also going to practice every practice, you know, and they're not going to try to get the coach to cancel practice. And like, it's right place, right time. And, you know, I see this a lot with children too, obviously, as I have some. So many times people nowadays think that these kids, and they're overly aggressive and bad guys that can coach, right? I'm well aware of that. But I will say, in terms of like the hard on them and the discipline and stuff, I've watched it with my own eyes and I've watched it with my own son. They crave that. They crave that. They really do. You know, they don't want the substitute teacher that just lets them do anything. They want somebody to teach them. They want somebody to show them the way. They want to be a part of something. And that's not, that's the human condition. And I can only imagine the Devin Bookers, the DeAndre Aytons, the other guys that have been around, you know, that when they walk in, they see that and it's like, you know, maybe like a Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, they're more like kind of peers with Chris. So when Chris is yelling at them back in the day, it comes off like, man, F this guy. And they resent him. These guys, they don't resent him at all. They couldn't resent him less. And you see the other night, they were playing Denver. They're running out on him. There's 18 seconds left. He was yelling at him. Chris Paul. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that the Clippers guys were all like, man, shut up.
Sometimes
leave us alone, right? Like, it's too much.
Sometimes you need friction.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need somebody who's criticizing
direction
you.
Direction, too. Yeah.
Yeah, criticizing you, directing you. And, like, it's about oftentimes how you take it and how you respond to it. Because, like, nobody's perfect.
That's
and
right.
If you're criticized, it's not necessarily some indictment on your character and who you are. If anything, there can be some truth rooted in criticism. Not always. Sometimes there's nothing to it. But like, you know, if you're a player on the court and Chris Paul, a future Hall of Famer, is telling you this or that, like,
right.
Maybe there's something there and something to learn from. And, you know, this is a guy who's won at the highest levels, not won a championship. Maybe he will. There's still a lot of time for him. And with this Suns team, they could, but he's been through it all. And if you're not going to listen to that guy, I'm not sure I'd want you on my team if you're not going to listen to Chris Paul's feedback.
Well, truth be told, he's probably, I'd say two things. He's probably better about
better
communicating
at it, yes.
with guys.
Because he probably improved too.
He's older,
too,
wiser.
Because he's learned. Right?
Yeah. And I'm sure that even when he's tough on guys, there's probably some good cop, bad cop that goes on with him and Monty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
Where it's like,
no doubt.
Usually there's the like, it's almost like a switch of roles. Usually it's the player that, it's the player that does the, hey man, it's okay. Yeah. It's okay.
And that's Monty here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, it's almost like usually it's the player that has to
camera
walk
pan
over.
Goes to Monty's office. Chris yelled at me.
Yeah,
Chris
right.
yelled at me.
It's okay. It's okay. It's just keep right. on. It's all right, man. Right? And then
he finds a way to take Chris Paul's criticism, shows him some film, and say, "Here's what Chris was talking about."
That's
and
right.
It all works.
That's right.
Good cop, bad cop is a real freaking thing, dude.
Oh,
it really
100%.
Is. It's effective.
Absolutely. One last thing on them. Chris has got a great matchup either way. No matter who wins between Utah and the Clippers, he's got a very good matchup.
Chris Paul versus Jazz drop defense or
oh my God.
Just facing the Clippers. Chris Paul versus the Clippers would be some
either,
drama, huh? It's
either one.
Team.
All right, Kev, you got to explain something to me.
What's that, Chris? What's going on?
This
taking off your glasses.
This friggin' Ty Lue. I mean,
what's going on?
Look,
what's bothering you now, Chris?
No, he's not bothering me now. I just don't get why it's taken two games twice. He gets to the right thing. He does. But it's like somebody men in black zapped him. For like he forgot the Dallas series. So he turns around and he goes back with this Zubats thing and not playing Terrence Mann. And it's like, wait, didn't we just watch this? And of course we'd had. And so that's what he does against Utah. And then by the time they get to 3-4, which were, in Dallas the last series, but this time they were in L.A., but by the time they get to 3-4, he's starting Batum. He's not going big anymore. He's doing this interchangeable thing. Terrence Mann's in the rotation. And it's like, hold on, man. Like, why? Like, we've seen the numbers. We see how devastating they can be with this group. And it took him, you know, a couple of games before that got figured out in that first round. And what's just so odd to me is it's like literally the same stuff. Like the same stuff just happened in the last series. And now it's happened in this series. And like, I think like we said from the beginning, they've got the goods. It's just bizarrely, like, I don't know, tried something that, remember there was no Luke Kennard even, and Luke Kennard literally beat Dallas in a game by hitting the shots. He beat them. And he wasn't even playing. It was like, no Luke Kennard. And then they come out last night, again, they're starting Batum. Rudy gets played off the floor with fouls. Kawhi, you know, is murdering Derek Favors at the rim. The Clippers, and George and Kawhi are both unbelievable simultaneously, two games in a row. And I just can't figure out why it takes him a little bit to get there. But he does get there. He does. I mean, do I give him credit for getting there? Or do I still get frustrated with the fact that you pissed away two games for no reason? It's just weird.
I mean, he got to that point, and you know, maybe there'll have to be another adjustment again. Right now, what they're doing, like, nothing specifically is working against Donovan Mitchell. He has elevated his play to the point that there's no scheme that works against him. He always has something to defeat you. But them going to the blitz, throwing it in there randomly, occasionally trapping and doubling, and he has an opportunity with the ball. It's working to just, you know, screw with their rhythm and what they're doing. But if Mike Conley returns, that changes everything, because Conley and Gobert have that connection in the pick and roll that could open up things up there. And then you have Mitchell in a situation where there's another primary guy who can create shots for him away from the ball, bringing him off handoffs and screens and cutting opportunities. If Conley's return in the series is the key, you know, if Utah gets Conley back, I feel pretty good about their chances. Maybe he'll give it a go, like we saw with James Harden tonight. I'd be a little bit surprised if he didn't. This is a must-win game, man. It's time for Quinn Snyder to raise the minutes of his starters, 40-plus minutes for these key guys. Time to ramp it up, play your best players, time to run your best plays, and time to get Mike Conley out there, even if he's a little bit limited. You need his playmaking. You got to have him.
I know, but I just think there is a possibility that a hobbled Conley actually hurts you more. And I say this as big a Conley fan as there is in the world.
I know where you're going with it.
Because you could throw out hobbled Harden tonight, and he got to the 8 assists, and he got to the 5 boards, and he could at least, you know, stand in the paint so Giannis doesn't just mow him over and be strong, right? Boy, you want to talk about targeting somebody. And you got Conley on a bum wheel. You know what I mean? Like, him holding up defensively, and he is a guy that is, that's what he does. He's not the, you know, cerebral, just kind of run. Like, he's fast. He's always been quick. He's always been one dribble pull up type guy. He's always been beat you to the spot type of guy. And a hobbled Mike Conley, you know, again, just with a guy that's always been a quick guy, I think, I don't know if it helps you in the same way, because he doesn't provide the decoy that a Harden does.
You're right. And he's also struggled.
So he's got to be good, you know?
And he's struggled severely in the past when he's been limited. Remember when he had the Achilles thing a couple of years ago?
Oh, yeah.
And he looked like a total shell of his former self.
That's right. He looked
nothing like the Mike Conley we've watched dominate in the pick and roll for years. So to your point, you know, maybe you give it a try in the first quarter. If he doesn't look like himself, you pull the plug. And maybe that screws up your rhythm, you know, screws up your rotations. But to me, I think it's worth it. I really think it's worth it because that's when the Jazz are at their best, when you have Conley in the starting five, you have Joe Ingles coming off the bench. So that way you're not relying so much on Jordan Clarkson off the bench. Ingles coming off that bench is when Utah is at their absolute best. I'd love to see them go with that. And not only that, Chris, you know, if you're not, if the pick and roll with Gobert screening is going to be neutralized, let's see some stuff with like Joe Ingles on the short roll. Set some screens for Mitchell from like 28 feet out, 29 feet out. Get creative. Get Ingles on the short roll. Get Royce O'Neal on the short roll. I'd like to see a little bit of that. Some new stuff from the Jazz in this situation with the way the Clippers are defending them. I think there's, even if without Conley, there's a little bit more stuff that they can do on the offensive end. But even then, though, the Clippers, as you said earlier, they're potent right now.
Yeah.
With this group, it goes on both ends of the floor as well.
And they're just putting so much pressure on the Jazz. Even if you want to, you know, if you want to complain about the refs, and I'm sure there's a lot of Utah fans that are, I mean, you can't put the Clippers on the line 38 times. And the one thing that is a little troubling is, you know, in many cases when the Jazz lose a game, it's like, they didn't hit their threes. I mean, they were 17 to 42. They shot 41% from three and lost the game. I mean,
not shoot 40%? It's pretty wild.
I know.
Almost every night.
What would worry me is Kawhi and George both being awesome simultaneously twice. It's one thing for them to do it once. And in fact, I heard Russillo had this number the other day, and I was more in line with what I believe Simmons guessed than what the answer was. It was, how many times have they both scored 30 in the same game since they've been with the Clippers? And I think Bill guessed like, you know, 22 or something like that, right? The answer was like 5. Like they both scored 30 in the same game. Like they have not been able to be simultaneously awesome. And yet these last two games, they have been simultaneously awesome. And that's troubling if you're Utah, right?
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
That one's a tough one. This is set up so much better. I thought these series were hurtling towards being pretty crap, and it's actually gotten way more interesting. Partly because of injury, but however we got there, we got there. You know, there was the one run out series with Phoenix, but the other three, you know, they're all in the balance. Is there anybody? I think Atlanta, that would stun me. That would stun me. There's not a winner in either of the other two series that would stun me. Clippers, Jazz, no. And Bucks, Brooklyn. I think neither of those series, if any of those four teams won their series, it would not stun me. If Atlanta did and Philly, you know, fell apart,
I'd be stunned by that.
Would be the one.
That one. Yep. And if it does happen, it's probably because Embiid isn't himself again.
Yeah. I think that's fair. It should be a very fun week. We'll have a lot of stuff to talk about by the time we come back on Thursday.
I look forward. We'll be recording again Thursday night. So yep. In your feed late Thursday, early Friday, depending on where you are in the world.
Big thanks to Carlos for filling in as our producer again this week. Appreciate everybody listening to Mismatch, and we will talk to you on Friday.
Have a fun week, everybody.